Today's first reading is from On the Brink of Everything by Parker J. Palmer. This book is full of wisdom gained from living a long life of challenge and experience by Mr. Parker, which I would recommend to you. It's a fairly easy read and gives lots to think about. Parker J. Palmer. Every day I get closer to the brink of everything. We're all headed that way, of course, even when we're young, though most of us are too busy with important matters to ponder our mortality. But when a serious illness or accident strikes, or someone dear to us dies, or we go to a class reunion and wonder who all those old people are, it becomes harder to ignore the drop-off that lies just over the edge of our lives. Parker goes on to say, I'll be nearly 80 when this book is published, so it shouldn't surprise me that I can sometimes see the brink from here. But it does. I'm even more surprised by the fact that I like being old. Imagine. Parker talks about diminishments, loss of the ability to multitask, but finding joy in doing one thing at a time. There is tedium and inspiration, anger and love, anguish and joy. It all belongs along with calamities woven together to create life. He jokes, old age is no time to hunker down unless disability demands it. Old is just another word for nothing left to lose. A time of life to take bigger risks on behalf of the common good.
Good morning again. The words of poet Jane Kenyon. Otherwise, I got out of bed on two strong legs. It might have been otherwise. I ate cereal, sweet milk, ripe, flawless peach. It might have been otherwise. I took the dog uphill to the birch wood. All morning I did the work I love. At noon I lay down with my mate. It might have been otherwise. We ate dinner together at a table with silver candlesticks. It might have been otherwise. I slept in a bed in a room with paintings on the walls and planned another day just like this day. But one day, I know it will be otherwise. Jane Kenyon wrote this poem when her husband, also a poet and 19 years her senior, was precariously recovering from a cancer surgery. They both assumed, logically, that he would eventually predecease her. Ironically and tragically, Jane Kenyon succumbed to leukemia at the age of 47, and her partner is now over 90. Every one of us lives with a sense of otherwise in varying degrees, from fairly remote to more present. The intent of this morning's service is to introduce a bit of practicality into our consciousness, if it doesn't already exist there. The inspiration for my part of this address occurred to me over a year ago, when a founding member of the symphony chorus died unexpectedly. I will refer to her as Pauline, not wishing to compromise her posthumous privacy. Pauline, who lived alone, had a standing weekly appointment with her hairdresser of many years. On this particular day in January, she didn't appear for her wash and set at the traditional time. Her hairdresser phoned, and when there was no answer, became concerned enough to drive over to Pauline's house. There she found the car in the driveway, but no response to her knocking. One thing led to another, and eventually police discovered Pauline inside, deceased. Some days later, I received a call from a distant mutual acquaintance, wondering if I knew who and where Pauline's next of kin were. Even though my contact with her was long-standing, it was relatively peripheral, and I certainly could be of no help except to say that I thought she had a brother in Australia. Pauline belonged to several groups in town, had traveled widely, and was a devoted member of St. Paul's Anglican Church. But no one could provide the crucial information that would help in the very necessary and immediate arrangements. Now, in St. Paul's defense, they do maintain files on their membership, but Pauline had clearly neglected to fill them out. Without belaboring the details, eventually her brother and two nephews were located, but their connection was tenuous, to say the least, and my understanding is that there is still much to be resolved. Aside from the very practical aspects of this story, I felt a deep sense of sadness that I, who was not at all central to Pauline's life, was desperately considered to be a resource at this critical time. In your order of service today, we have included a form that would provide the most basic information to be housed confidentially in the office. Now, when we were organizing this service, I went to speak with Angie, and I think David had told me before that such a form exists in our office, but very few have been filled out. And we decided collectively that it's quite an involved form, as it should be, but this is like the short form census. You know, it's easy to fill this out, and it would be so very helpful in a time of sudden illness or death. So, short form census, we all got it. It is our fervent hope that each and every member be able to avoid Pauline's circumstance. Please do submit this form, even today, if nothing of its kind exists already for you here. One's religious home is a natural place to turn in a time of crisis. As a little addendum to this topic, but rather directly related, I'd like to share a more personal story about a life passage. Over two decades ago, I received the startling news that I was dealing with a cancer condition that required surgery within 10 days of the diagnosis. I didn't have a will. Being 42 years old, with no dependents and not yet owning property, the whole idea of a will was just under my radar. I mean, yeah, it's a useful thing, but someday I would do it. But it is remarkable how a crisis focuses one's mind. What about my simple bank account, my RRSPs, my beloved stuff? If I accidentally rolled off that operating table, I mean, what would happen? So, what needed to be done was done, and as you see, it didn't need to be activated right away. For whatever reason, I took out my copy of that will a few years ago and was absolutely gobsmacked at how outdated it was and how unhelpful it would be to anyone who needed it. Both powers of attorney for my health and my property had predeceased me, as had many people I named as beneficiaries. Of those living, many had divorced or otherwise had just moved outside of my immediate sphere. What a mess for my executor. Subsequently, I revised my will, and now I'm almost afraid to look at it again. But I shall, because the longer I live, the more I come to understand John Lennon's line that was quoted here just last week by our guest speaker. Life is what happens when you're making other plans. Every summer, as I drive Highway 17 north of our magnificent Lake Superior, I think, if I hit a moose and suddenly disappear from the face of this earth, who is going to care enough to deal with everything I leave behind? Earlier in today's service, I shared another significant life passage of mine, that of retirement. Although I don't feel any older than I did, say, yesterday, I carry my moose metaphor with me, and I am not leaving this building today until I fill out this form, my own form. Last year, part of the service that we lay chaplains delivered dealt with the importance of having some tangible memorial service or celebration of life for those people who grieve, remember, and remain. Today, I'm also concerned with those we leave behind in the sense of, are we doing them the kindness of being prepared? Have I mentioned filling out your form? Over to Jean.
Thank you. About 20 years ago, when I was 50, Richard and I went to Cuba with our friends and Unitarians, Peggy Tripp and Wayne Hill. She and I swam with dolphins. I was more than a little terrified, but Peggy jumped right in to the deep oceanic lagoon with a big smile on her face. Remember Wayne? So I jumped in too, and it became a life-amazing experience. About 10 years ago, Peggy Tripp died. We were both 60 then and planned a trip to Churchill to see the polar bears. Peggy suffered from two or three illnesses, which I won't go into here, but she never stopped making plans. She taught me that. And when she died a week or so before our trip, we so missed her. She was one of those people who lived in joy, good humor, and curiosity throughout her life. She never let her health stop her from making plans. She was philosophical in moving forward. And I'm not sure what this has to do with sharing my experience of being a lay chaplain, but now at age 70, I know better than ever what being philosophical means. And it's all good. Peggy had plenty of family and friends around her, but what if you don't? In any case, fill out that form and leave it with LUF. Parker Palmer says, he's not given to waxing romantic about aging and dying. He says that the first is a privilege and the second is not up for negotiation. So fill out that form for yourself, for your family, friends, and LUF. We want to ensure that if something happens to you, we won't have to ask, as my 3-year-old Ghostbuster grandson loves to ask, who are you going to call? And finally, Parker Palmer says, I like being on the brink of everything because it gives me new perspectives on my past, present, and future, and insights into the inner dynamics that shape and drive my life. I've long thought of old age as a time when all that's left to tell is the truth, trying to remember to tell it in love. What I know for sure is this: we come from mystery and we return to mystery. I know this too. Standing closer to the reality of death awakens my wonder at the many gifts of life.